Today's presenters are Ming Fu, Mike Callaghan, and Paulina Goldstein. Ming, Mike, and Paulina are software developers from the Western Commerce Support Organization. As members of the Western Commerce Support Team, they are responsible for providing technical assistance for the Western Commerce family of products. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ming, Mike, and Paulina.
Thank you, Elijah. So let's please turn to page 2 and let us take a look at the agendas for today's presentation. So at a high level, we'll first give a general overview on what is Thrust and its use in J2EE applications. Next, we'll take a closer look at the various parts of the Thrust framework and the integration with Webster Commerce. We'll also take a look at the mapping of URLs and views in the Thrust configuration file. Then we'll discuss the key points of customization in a typical request flow. And finally, we will highlight some of the common pitfalls when configuring Thrust for Webster Commerce. At the end of the presentation, we will then answer any questions you may have regarding Thrust. Slide 3, please. So what is Thrust? Let us first take a look at what Thrust is from a J2EE application's perspective. So typically, web applications nowadays return dynamic responses as opposed to just static pages. So to produce the dynamic response, the application can interact with a database or business logic engine to customize the response. This can become messy if you have database code or control flow code embedded inside your JSPs. So unless these concerns are separated, larger applications become more difficult to maintain and hence the use of the MVC architecture. The Thrust framework is designed to help developers create web applications that utilize the MVC architecture. This helps to separate the display logic from the business logic. The three main components of MVC architecture are model, view, and the controller. The model, for example, the retrieval of a list of product categories from the database, contains only the pure application data. It contains no logic describing how to present that data to the user. The view, for example, the HTML or JavaScript within the top categories display JSP, presents the model's data to the user. The view doesn't know how to access the model's data, but it knows what the data, but it does not know what the data means or what the user can do to manipulate. Finally, the controller. An example of this is the servlet. This exists between the view and the model. It listens to events triggered by the view and executes the appropriate actions for these events. In most cases, the action is to call a method on the model. Since the view and the model are connected through a notification mechanism, the results of this action is then automatically reflected in the view. So three key components to the Thrust framework are the request handler, which maps the standard URI provided by the application developer. The response handler, this transfers control to another resource which completes the response. And the tag library, this helps developers create interactive form-based applications with server pages. Please turn to slide 4. So slide 4 presents a general overview of how commerce uses Thrust. So out of the box, Webster Commerce supports the use of Thrust 1.1. Our sample stores also make use of Thrust for routing of requests. It doesn't use other functionalities such as form validation or tiles. However, these features are still available and can be implemented as necessary. So a thing to note here is that Webster Commerce extends some of the base Apache Thrust components, such as the action servlet, the action, and the action mapping classes. But it also makes use of the base classes, such as the request processor. We'll discuss some of these classes in more detail in the next couple of slides. Slide 5, please. On slide 5, we'll begin by looking at the action servlet. This is highlighted in the upper left corner of the diagram. What the action servlet represents in the MVC architecture is the controller. However, you'll notice in the diagram that the controller is made up of a few other components as well. The action servlet is just the initial component that a request hits. So the job of the controller is to process the user's request, determine what the user is trying to achieve, retrieve data from the model, and then select the proper view to respond to the user. In this case, the action servlet receives an HTTP request. It then uses the Thrust config files to determine the appropriate application module for the request, and then routes the request through the module's request processor. The action servlet is the component that delegates most of its work to the request processor and action classes. One thing to note here is that WebSphere Commerce extends the Struts Action Service class. The reason why we do this is because the base version of the Action Service class doesn't allow for dynamic updates of the Struts config file, whereas the Commerce version, called EC Action Service, allows you to modify the Struts config file and have these changes picked up without having to restart the web application. So another way you can think about this is that it's very similar to the request service in WebSphere Commerce 5.6.x. Slide 6, please. The request processor is where a majority of the core processing occurs for each request. So what is this component responsible for? Well, once it receives the request from the action service, it reads the struts config file and looks at the action mapping. You can think of the action mapping as a similar logic that handles the URL reg and dereg mappings in WebSphere Commerce 5.6.x. It'll then look at what URL this is and what command it's associated with, and then pass the request to the base action. The base action will then do its processing and send the view back to the user that made the request. By default, Commerce uses the base struts request processor class. Slide 7, please. The base action is WebSphere Commerce implementation struts action class. So you can think of this as a generic class that is used in both controller commands. This acts as the bridge between the application's model and view in the MVC architecture. So when a request is received, the base action will determine what data it needs from the model. And once it gets this data, then it transfers the data to the view via an action forward, as seen in step 5 in the diagram. So a note about the base action class is that it's a very useful extension point for adding pre- and post-processing logic. So before the request can go to the controller command, you can execute your logic, and then when it comes back and tries to redirect to the view, you can execute your logic again. We'll get into more details about this a bit later. Slide 8, please. So now we're at the business logic facade. There's not much to this component, but it can be thought of as in the abstraction of the controller command. So the base action invokes the business logic facade by specifying the interface name of the controller command. The business logic facade then checks the command range table, and using interface name, it determines the appropriate implementation for a particular store as specified in the request, and then it executes the command. Slide 9, please. Action mapping. Action mappings can be thought of as a set of destinations inside Struts config XML. We'll get into the more finer details of the action mappings in the next couple of slides, but for an overview of the action mapping, it's really just a mapping between the URL and the controller command interface. It also includes the mapping between the view and the global forward, or in other words, a mapping to a JSP. Another note about this is that WebSphere Commerce has its own version of the action mapping class. It extends the struts implementation of the class. The reason why this class was extended is to allow for commerce-specific properties, such as HTTPS, authenticate, and credentials accepted. So with the HTTPS property, if you're submitting an SSL or non-SSL request, Commerce needs to know about it, and it will force the request to be secured if it is specified. With the authenticate property, you can also specify whether the request requires authentication. And the credentials accepted property is used with the Remember Me functionality to allow remembered users access the pages without having to re-authenticate themselves. Slide 10, please. Global forward. So the struts config XML file also has definitions for global forwards. And similar to an action mapping, a global forward is a mapping of a view to a JSP. WebSphere Commerce also has its own implementation of the action forward class called EC Action Forward. This allows for handling the resource class name property that determines whether a view should be redirected or forwarded. Slide 11, please.
Before going to the next chart, if you cannot yet join the e-meeting, you can still access the presentation by going to IBM.com and typing 701-0843 in the search box at the very top of the page. A technical document with the PDF file will display. Thank you. I will now turn the presentation back to me.
Okay, so on slide 11, you will see a snippet of the action mappings from the struts config file. Apologies for the display in the e-meeting. It may not be as clear, but if you have a local copy, it may be better to view it from the PDF instead. So to continue, as we previously discussed, the action mapping maps the URL to an action or a command. The sample snippet here will illustrate how this works. So when defining an action mapping, all definitions need to be enclosed within the action mapping tag. And the type in most cases is always going to be of the EC action mapping class. The URL in our first example is the store catalog display. This is defined in the path attribute. Now to map this URL to an action, we specify in the parameter attribute the name of the interface for the controller command. The type by default for all WebSphere Commerce actions or URLs is base action. Now if you wanted all your URLs to use a specific implementation of the base action, then you can change that type to your own custom base action here. In the second example, the key sections note are the set property tags for the HTTPS and authenticate properties. So what we're trying to point out here is that the store ID of 0 maps to a value of 0, and the store ID of 201 maps to a value of 1. So for HTTPS or the site level, the store ID of 0 is set to 0, and the store ID of 201 is set to 1. So you should always read this as the store ID, colon, the value, comma, the store ID, colon, the value, and so on. Now, if you look at the previous example above, you'll notice that we didn't specify the property for HTTPS. So in this case, it would default to the store ID 0 with a value of 0. Now back to the second example, you see that with the authenticate property, we only explicitly put in the store ID of 201 with the value set to 0. So that means implicitly that there's a value of 0 colon 0. This means that at the site level, the URL address add, by default, will not require you to be authenticated, but for the store ID with 201, the URL will require authentication. Slide 12, please. On slide 12 is a snippet of the global forward and action mappings from the struct config file. Mapping between a view and a global forward is basically a mapping to a JSP. So on the previous slide, for URL, what we did was created an action mapping for an action and placed the definitions within the action mapping section. Now, for a view, what you need to do is create a global forward definition in addition to the action mapping. And similarly, as with an action mapping definition, all global forward definitions need to be enclosed within the global forward tag. The class name attribute for global forward, in most cases, is always going to be EC action forward. The view is then specified in the name attribute. And as you can see, typically, to specify a view, you would put the name slash the store ID. So if you look at the first forward definition, you'll see that we specify the view name, address, book form to be associated with the store ID of 201. However, you'll notice that in the second forward definition, the name attribute only has the name, address, book form, but we didn't specify store ID. In this case, it's implied that that the definition will be at the site level or slash store ID of 0. Next, we have the path attribute. This represents the JSP that the view will be mapped to. The path is, by default, relative to the web archive, but you could have the store directory in there too, and then it would be relative to the store directory. So another thing to note about this is that you can also specify a set of properties called store dir. So if you didn't explicitly specify store dir equals no or store dir equals yes, then it would look for the JSP in the stores.war. Or it would default to a particular store directory, like in Super Direct, if you specified a store ID in the name attribute. We also need to specify the property for the resource class name attribute. The value for this represents the class that you want to use to do an HTTP forward or redirectory specific view. Lastly, you also need to specify the action mappings, similar to what you did for the URL commands in the previous example. So we won't go over that again. Slide 13, please. So on slide 13, this is just another example of mapping views, but in this case, for messaging views. So this is similar to mapping to a JSP, but for messaging. In this case, we introduced the device format, which is added to the end of the attribute name. So in this example, we have the device format type of -3, which is used for email. Also, for messaging, instead of just specifying the class name, we need to provide the interface name, as well as the implementation class name. Other than that, everything else is pretty much the same, so we'll just move on. I will be now turning it over to Paulina, who will be discussing some of the customization scenarios with Struts and WebSocommerce. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Meng. We'll now take a look at some customization points in the typical request processing flow. As you know, any activity on your site will initiate a web request. This request will go through the following flow. The request is processed by the serverless filters, such as the runtime filter and the cache filter. Once the request has been filtered, it is passed to the EC Action Server class, the WebSocommerce extension of the Struts Action Server class. Further, the request is passed to the request processor that performs pull request processing functions, as described earlier. Finally, the base action will locate and call the appropriate business logic. Let's take a look at the three main points which can be customized in this flow. They are the serverless filter, the request processor, and the base action. Slide 15, please. Serverless filters are not part of the Struts framework. However, they play an important role in request and response handling. Therefore, we cover them as part of our presentation. Serverless filters allow you to intercept the request when it enters and leaves the web container. They allow you to transform the header and the content of a request or response. You can configure your web request to be filtered by a chain of serverless filters in a specific order. The filters are defined in the web XML of your web module and are instantiated in the order of appearance when the web module is loaded. WebSocommerce takes advantage of serverless filters, and the main ones are the runtime serverless filter, which performs a number of tasks such as parsing the SEO request and registering the request in the performance monitor, and the cache filter, which, as the name implies, is used to integrate Dynacache with WebSocommerce. Please turn to slide 16. Here are some general examples of how one may use serverless filters. You can use serverless filters for logging and auditing. That is, you can query the header of the request to collect information about the user and compose a report of their shopping habits. You can use filters for authentication purposes by parsing and blocking certain requests based on user identity. You can write filters to target the request and response to a particular locale. And the final example, you can request, if your request returns an XML document, then you can use a filter to transform the XML to an HTML prior to returning it to the caller. Please turn to slide 17. Another customization point is the request processor class. The request processor allows you to intercept the request after it goes through the serverless filters, but before it gets to the action. Here is why you may want to intercept the request at the request processor as opposed to the serverless filter. Once the request gets to the request processor, it has already gone through the cache filter. This means that the request processor code will execute for requests that have not been cached yet. And more importantly, the request processor has access to the Struts configuration data, so you can make use of the EC Action Mapping class, while a serverless filter does not, since it is not part of the Struts framework. By default, WebSocommerce is configured to use the standard request processor implementation provided by the Struts framework. Because it does not require custom implementation, the WebSocommerce web application can exploit any specialized request processor, such as one required for tile support. The tile request processor is an example of a customization of the request processor. It extends the Struts request processor to handle tile requests. Please turn to slide 18. To customize the request processor behavior, you will need to extend the request processor class and override methods whose behavior you're interested in changing. Note that if you are using tiles, you will need to extend the tiles request processor class instead. You will then need to set the value of the request of the processor class property in the struts configuration file to your custom class, as shown on the slide. An example of when you may customize the request processor is if you had to force a secured request into a non-secured request. As you know, in the regular shopping flow, once you do anything involves the shopping cart, for example, add an item to the cart, the request becomes secure and served over HTTPS. All subsequent requests from this point on will be served over HTTPS as well, even if they go after catalog and product display commands. If you had to force the request going after the catalog and product display commands into non-secure requests, you could do so by customizing the request processor class. Please turn to slide 19. Now, let's look at the last customization point in the struct controller flow, the action class. The action class is the last point in the request processing because the request is before the request is handed over to the business logic facade. You may want to customize the action class if you need to execute some business logic for a group of commands. Note that you would not customize the struct action class directly because Webster Commerce extends the struct action class for integration purposes. It provides two extensions of the struct action class, and they are the base action, which supplies the functionality that's necessary to invoke Webster Commerce commands based on the action's configuration, and the AJAX action, which is used to invoke Webster Commerce controller commands through AJAX style requests. Please turn to slide 20. Customizing the Webster Commerce action class is a two-step process. Step one, the base action and the AJAX action classes have extension hooks, and they are the pre-process and post-process methods. These two methods are called by the execute method, and in order to add pre-processing or post-processing logic to your actions, you need to add functionality to these two methods respectively. And step two, by default, all Webster Commerce actions are configured to use the base action as their implementation class. You will need to configure your action to use your extension class instead, as shown on the slide. For an example of how to extend the base action class, you can refer to the extending Struts action tutorial in the Webster Commerce Information Center. Please turn to slide 21. As Meng mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, one of the reasons for integrating Webster Commerce with Struts is to give you the ability to take advantage of some great features that Struts has to offer. In the next couple of slides, I'm going to give you an overview of two such features, the Struts Validator Framework and the Struts Files. When you submit an online registration form, your input needs to be validated before processing. Validation allows you to make sure that all of the required fields have been filled in, etc. Currently, validation logic is handled by the controller commands themselves. The Struts Validator Framework provides you with a script to field validation that removes extensive parameter checking from the commands. The Validator Framework makes use of action forms. In a nutshell, action forms are value objects that are used to capture input data from an HTML form and transfer it to the action class. Because users often enter invalid data, web applications need a way to store the input data temporarily so that it can be redisplayed when the error occurs. And the action form class is acts as a buffer to hold the state of the data when the user enters while the validation is happening. If you decide to make use of the validator framework, you will need to add a declaration of the validator plugin into your web module struts config ext.xml file, as shown on the slide. Note the value of the path names property in the declaration. The struts validator framework comes with a set of default validator rules applicable to a number of business scenarios. You may make use of these rules as well as write your own. The default validator rules are specified in the file called validatorrules.xml that resides in the web INF directory of your store module. To customize these rules or add your own, use the validation.xml file. You can then identify the actions for which you would like to use the strut validation and configure these actions in the configuration file as shown on the slide. Please turn to slide 22. Here's an example of how you would define your validation rules and the corresponding error messages. You will define your rules in the validation XML file. In the above example, we're defining the rule for the MyContactApp action. The name attribute of the form element identifies the action form associated with the HTML form to be validated. The field element specifies the rule to be used for particular form fields. And the message element points to the message resource key to use when generating the error message. In our example, the mapping for the email field specifies two rules, required and email. Both of these reference error messages defined in the resource bundle. The resource bundle to be used is defined in the struct config ext XML using the message dash resources element, as shown on the slide. In this example, we're using the store error messages resource bundle defined for the consumer direct store. And finally, at the bottom of the slide, you can see how the message keys from the validation rules are mapped to user-friendly error messages that will be displayed on the GSP in case the validation rules are not met. Please turn to slide 23. Another good feature of Strut is tiles. Tiles are used to organize and assemble the content and layout of GSP pages. Tiles are an alternative to include. Tiles help reduce the amount of redundant code and allow you to separate the content from the layout. This is a template-based approach. A template is a GSP page that defines what the pages of an application will look like without specifying the content. The content is inserted into the template page at runtime. One or more pages may use the same template. A tile is an area or region within the GSP page. For example, your page can consist of a header, menu, and body region, so-called tiles. To enable the use of tiles, you must declare that you're using the tiles plugin in the strut config ext XML file, as shown on the slide. The Strut framework will initialize the tiles plugin at application startup time. In particular, it will load the tiles request processor implementation of the request processor class instead of its default implementation. Note the definitions config property within the definition of the plugin. This property points to an XML file that you will use in order to define your pages using tiles. Once you enable the tiles plugin, you will need to declare that you're using the tiles tag library on top of your GSPs, as shown in the bottom of the slide. Please turn over to slide 24. We will now get into an example that illustrates the use of tiles. At the top of the page, you can see what a simple definition from a tiles dex XML looks like. Recall that the name of this file is defined in the strut configuration while enabling the plugin. The name of our definition is consumer-direct.tiles.example.view. Note that the name starts with a store name. This is a customization that is specific to Western Commerce, and Mike will comment on the importance of this later on. The page attribute in the tiles definition defines the template file to be used, and the put tag specifies the different components to plug into the template. In our case, the template for the consumer-direct.tiles.example.view page is defined in the template JSP file, and the components to be plugged into the template are top JSP and the top categories displays use. To complete the picture, you can see what the corresponding strut configuration looks like at the bottom of the page. The path corresponding to the tiles example view action is tiles.example.view. Since it does not start with a slash, the controller knows that this is a tile definition. The controller will construct the view based on the tiles definition as it appears in the tiles XML. In our case, it will plug in the top JSP and the top category display view into the placeholders for the header and body sections in the template JSP file. And that is all for tiles. I will now pass it over to Mike, who will go over some of the common pitfalls with struts and with TrueColor.
Thank you, Polina. On to slide 25, please. Now that we've looked at the framework of struts, the mappings, and some of the customizations, we're going to go over some of the common pitfalls that could be hit in these areas. The first is one that Polina just mentioned, and I just want to quickly reiterate it, that for tiles, you need to prepend the store identifier to the tile's definition's path properties. So for the example that we have here on the bottom of our page, we would want to change the definition name from tiles.example.view to consumerdirect.tiles.example.view if our store identifier were to be consumer direct. Slide 26, please. One more important thing you need to understand is the order in which the struts configuration files are loaded. You may have the problem where when you're customizing some part of commerce, you're not really sure where to put your custom pores and custom actions. Each web module, such as the Stores WAR or the Commerce Accelerator WAR, each have their own set of struts configurations, and they're loaded in a certain order. This order is defined within the struts config XML, or sorry, the struts config XMLs are defined within the web XML of each web module. For example, in our example here, you can see one web module's web XML file. The ECActionServlet class takes in a parameter called config, which lists the struts files in the order which they will be loaded. Our example here, the struts config files will be loaded in the order of struts config XML, struts config migrate XML, then finally struts config ext XML. The last configuration loaded is the one that will be used. So for example, defining a global forward in the struts config ext will override one defined in the base struts config XML. This is why it's always best practice to add any customization into the struts config ext only. You should never modify the base struts config XML directly. Slide 27, please. The next issue deals with scheduler and messaging commands. The problem here is when you define a new action mapping, which may extend on a default one, with the intention of it being used for a scheduled job or a messaging command. However, when the scheduled job would run, or the messaging command would be invoked, you find it's actually using the original action mapping configuration. It seems the updated action mapping from the struts config ext within the stores module does not seem to be getting picked up. To understand the cause of this issue, we need to understand how the web requests are handled. A web request coming from a web channel is evaluated differently than one invoked by messaging or scheduler. A request coming from a web channel is bound to a particular web module and therefore has access to the actions and global forwards defined for this module only. However, a request from messaging or the scheduler may need to have access to actions and global forwards defined within different web modules. So to customize an action or a global forward that may be used by messaging or the scheduler, you would customize it in the struts config ext XML file of the stores module. However, these components will search the configuration loaded as part of the initialization servlet module first and thus may ignore your customized mapping. Having a duplicate action or forward within different configuration files may lead to this behavior. To avoid this problem and have your custom mapping picked up, you should manually remove any duplicate entries from within the struts config XML of the initialization servlet module only to ensure that your own is loaded. Alternatively, there's also an API you could obtain from commerce support to solve this problem. Slide 28, please. Now we're going to take a look at a simple configuration issue. The problem here is that you may have a view that's accessible only through SSL or HTTPS, but you need it to be accessed through non-SSL or HTTP. For example, you want to allow the order item add command to be run over HTTP. When you add an item to the cart and the protocol switches from HTTP to HTTPS, this may be a result of having the action defined with only an HTTPS property of 1, which will force any URL to HTTPS. The cause of this problem is either you have defined a value pair of store ID and 1, meaning the store will force to HTTPS, or you haven't defined anything specific to the store ID, meaning it'll use the default value, which can be found by store ID 0, the site ID. In this example we have here, if we originally only had the HTTPS property of 0:1 and nothing else, all of the stores will use this value and force the URL order item add command to HTTPS. As a resolution to this particular example, where the store ID would be 10,001, we should add the part in red and the XML snippet into the configuration. This 10,001:0 means that for store ID 10,001, it will keep the command in HTTP if it was already in HTTP prior to that. But any store ID other than 10,001 would still be using the default configuration of the site and switch over to HTTPS. Slide 29, please. The next common issue deals with changing the authentication required for views. The problem is that when changing the authentication of certain views from non-authenticated to authenticated, the page results in the generic error. You may notice that some views with the authenticate flag set to true don't render correctly, and in the logs you may see references to a missing catalog ID parameter. If a guest user hits a view that requires authentication, they'll be forwarded to the logon form page, where they need to log in, and then they'll be redirected to the page of their original request. But here the cause of the generic error is because the catalog data beam fails on the logon form page. The URL in the browser does not have a catalog ID parameter, but rather just a store ID and a crypto string. The Commerce Runtime Authentication redirects the user to the logon form URL using only the store ID and the URL parameter for the redirected URL after the login, without passing in the needed catalog ID parameter. To alleviate this problem, the logon form JSP needs to be modified so that when authentication is used, it should retrieve the catalog ID from the next URL rather than the current request property. Again, custom logic could handle this, or there's also an existing APAR you can obtain from Webster Commerce support for this as well. Slide 30, please. The next problem also deals with authentication, but more specifically, authentication via partial credential. Here the problem is that when a user who checks the Remember Me box when logging in, closes the browser, and returns to the site, they are tracked as a partially authenticated user. We say partially authenticated because the persistent cookie has kept track of the user ID, yet they have not actually logged in during the current browser session. Now, you may have a view which contains information specific to a certain user and is generally secure, meaning we have the authenticate flag set to true. Now, after enabling Remember Me, also known as persistent sessions, you may see that a remembered user who is partially authenticated cannot actually access this view. However, you expect that this user can see the view since they are authenticated. The reason this happens is because the default credentials accepted for a view is set to R, accepting registered users only, who are fully authenticated. Fully authenticated in the sense is logged in during the current browser session. In order to resolve this issue and allow a secure view to be hit by a remembered shopper, you should update the credentials accepted property in the action mappings for the view and set it to P. This will allow any form of authenticated user to access the view, whether they have logged in and are fully authenticated or whether they have been remembered and are only partially authenticated. Slide 31, please. The next issue deals with stress in web services development. The problem is found after adding an action mapping in a global forward for a web service response JSP within the struts config exe.xml. You may find that the new definitions are actually not found during runtime. For example, you could register a custom web service response JSP for user registration, however the response is never actually received. When the web service is not found, it will result in a no such method exception. The cause of this problem is where the web service struct definitions were placed originally. Webster Commerce uses a specific XML file for web services, and it's called struts wc web services XML. Definitions in the struts config XML or any other XML will not be registered or found when the web service is invoked. So to resolve this issue and properly define the web service, you should place your custom actions within the struts wc web services XML of the stores module. Slide 32, please. The final common issue we'll discuss involves publishing a custom store archive, or a star, in Webster Commerce 6.0. If you have migrated and have a star built on a previous release of Commerce, when you publish the store in the Commerce Admin Console, the publish may fail with an error stating, the store archive is not compatible with struts. Migrate the store archive to struts before publishing. This publishing failure results because pre-6.0 store archives were not meant to run on a struts framework and contain no information for the struts config files. WebSphere Commerce did not use the struts framework prior to Commerce 6.0. Instead, these store archives had their views and URLs registered in the viewReg and URLReg tables, respectively. But these tables no longer exist in Commerce 6.0 and have now been replaced by the global forwards and actions, which Men described earlier, within the struts config XML. In order to successfully publish your pre-6.0 star, the struts config information needs to be included in the store archive prior to the publish. There are various steps involved in this, including adding additional XML files to define these new mappings and forwards. But for full details, please refer to the Commerce 6 Info Center document entitled Updating the Web Application Configuration. We'll have a link to this at the end of the presentation. Slide 33, please. So we're going to conclude just by briefly mentioning which files you'll likely need to gather if working with the Commerce support team on a struts-related PMR. Can you advance to slide 33, please? Thank you. So here's the must-gather for the struts. Here you can see various files you would need to gather depending on the issue. For full details, please refer to a must-gather tech note, which we're also going to include at the end of this presentation. Slide 34, please. So, in summary, we've now looked at how the Struts framework implements our MVC architecture, facilitating the separation of business logic, presentation code, and the navigation between the two. The flow of a typical web request would be to first be handled by any servlet filter, which can use and modify header data. Any non-cached request would then be sent to the action servlet and routed to the appropriate module. Within each module, a request processor will determine which action is required based on the struts config XML and hand it off to the appropriate base action. Finally, in the base action, the request is bridged to the required business logic where a controller command itself will actually be executed. The key points in this flow which can be customized are servlet filters, request processor, or the base action. Views and URLs are defined in module-specific struts config XML with the use of global forwards and action mapping. Also, be sure to keep in mind the common pitfalls we discussed when configuring the struts framework specific to your own environment. Slide 35, please. Quickly, here's some references that may be of use to you, including the Apache Struts homepage, the must-gather that we referenced, and a few tutorials within the Commerce Info Center relating to struts. Slide 36, please. This chart includes a link to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to a webcast and conference information. You should visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. Finally, the My Support link on all product pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products that interest you. I just want to thank everybody who's joined our presentation. I hope it's been of use to you.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, replays of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Ming, Mike, and Pauline, for presenting today.